Welcome back to the X-Cast. The truth is in here. I am your host today, Carl Sweeney, and this is the start of our coverage of the 9th episode of Season 11, the penultimate episode, Nothing Lasts Forever. And I'm delighted to be joined today by Darren Mooney. Hi, Darren.
Hi, Carl. How are things?
Yeah, things are pretty good, thank you. And, well, what about yourself? Because I know you've caught up very recently on Season 11, last weekend, I believe. What have you made of the season so far?
So I had a lot of stuff happening going on. There was a film festival locally and stuff like that. So I didn't have a lot of free time in my schedule to consume them in the way that people normally consume television or used to consume television in the 90s. So I binged them, which is great. One of the things I found, actually, is if you binge, like, 90s episodic television, it works surprisingly well. And it arguably works much better than binging a serialized show, because when you binge a serialized show, it becomes very hard to tell one episode from another and to pick bits apart and to sort of form an opinion about individual episodes and how they fit together. Whereas if you're doing something like a 90s television show or an episodic show, or even like The X-Files Season 11, which is structurally sort of somewhere between the two, you have this capacity to basically process all of it very quickly and also to sort of see how the pieces fit together, which is quite handy as well. Like, I have to admit, I'm quite impressed with Season 11. I have some reservations about certain episodes. I suspect people know exactly which episodes they are. It's the premiere, which is My Struggle 3, which was hugely controversial and understandably hugely controversial. As much as I am a supporter and a fan of Carter's writing, as much as I admire some of the stuff that he's tried to do with My Struggle 1 and My Struggle 2, much more than many other people who had those attitudes towards those episodes, I found myself watching My Struggle 3 and just having the energy sort of drained out of me. But the great news is that the rest of the season actually flows really, really well. And I mean, it gets gradually better as it goes. So, I mean, I really like this. Plus One was interesting in many ways. And then sort of after that, when you get into The Lost Art of Foreheads Sweat, when you get into, say, Ghoulie, Kitten, Followers, and even last week's sort of Familiar, you have this sort of, like, this wonderful sense of momentum that feels weirdly like The X-Files never went away. It's one of the more interesting aspects of the 11th season as compared to the 10th season, the event season in inverted commas, is that, like, watching the event season, it felt very much like watching somebody try to learn how to ride a bike again after sort of, you know, being off it for years. And the 11th season has a much better rhythm to it in some respects. And, like, many of the episodes, and I mean, you know, it'll be a nice segue into talking about this one, feel like they could have come from, you know, I don't want to say the peak years of the show, because that sets an unrealistic expectation, but they could have been the product of the writers' rooms. You know, they wouldn't be the memorable episodes, they wouldn't be the best episodes, but they feel like they could have come from the writers' room at some point in the second season or the sixth season, sometime sort of around then. And I actually find that very interesting and very reassuring. And, like, I find it interesting how the show chooses to modernize in some respects and not in others. How it chooses to retain its identity, to be fundamentally The X-Files, to be the show that, you know, we all remember from the 90s, while also nodding towards, and I don't just mean stuff like serialization or you know, the five-act structure or whatever. I mean stuff like even the leaning on, say, creepypasta for stuff like Ghoulie or stuff like, for example, Familiar. There's, like, an interesting sort of blend and hybrid that's taking place that doesn't feel forced. It doesn't feel awkward. It doesn't feel like your granddad wearing cool sunglasses and wearing his cap backwards and saying groovy man. It feels like, you know, it feels like your father may be dropping a, you know, a cool slang word into conversation once you're going, he knows what that means, doesn't he? That's really strange, but it's also kind of cool. And there's a lot of that with Season 11. So I'm actually really, really impressed with Season 11 so far.
Yeah, I'm almost quite sad that it's over, to be honest, and it looks like there's a good chance there won't be a season 12, and I think there's a divide in opinion about whether or not that's a good thing, but I'm, you know, the more good episodes we get, the more sad I feel about that. But there we are, and in this episode, of course, Nothing Lasts Forever, which we've just seen in the last day or two, and we're going to focus on the characters of Mulder and Scully today, but I think it's probably good to start with some general thoughts on this episode. So, yeah, what are your overall impressions, Darren, of Nothing Lasts Forever?
I liked it a lot. there's always a but at the end of that. I liked it a lot, but it felt a lot like, it reminded me a lot of Familiar, which was last week's episode, which I also liked a lot in certain respects, but which also, like, one of the aspects of the revival, and it's true, more true of the 10th season than it is of the 11th, is the sense that there's a looseness to it. There's a sense of lack of focus or attention to, say, plotting and mechanics and stuff in storytelling. And I mean, to pick an example from this episode, you know, we spend 20 minutes with two parallel plot lines taking place, which are, you know, Mulder and Scully investigating, you know, the organ harvesting operation and sort of the missing sister, while at the same time cutting inside to Barbara, you know, Barbara's sort of penthouse where this you know cult thing is happening. And then in order to get those two plot points to converge in the final 15 minutes of the episode, the story makes this really massive and really awkward plot leap where it's like, oh, hey, Scully put a tracker in these organs and convinced the hospital, which was housing them and was set to destroy them but had not destroyed them yet, to put them in a place with low security, even though they were high risk, and allowed somebody to walk in, steal them, take them back to wherever the organs were going to be used. And they did all this on the behest of Mulder and Scully without any backup, without any interagency like cooperation, without any red tape. It's just like Scully had a tracker lying around, stuck it in a heart, and Bob's your uncle. All of a sudden that gets us to the climax of the episode. And there's a certain looseness in the storytelling that sort of that comes with that, where there's a sense of the episode knows what it's about, and I really admire that it knows what it's about thematically, and it's got a good sense of humor, it's got a really good premise, but some of the beats didn't feel entirely organic to me. They felt like we need this to happen because we want to get to a scene with X, Y, and Z in it, or we need to emphasize theme, you know, ABC. And it didn't feel natural in some respects for me.
Yeah, I agree on that point. But I found this episode like really strangely captivating, you know, and I felt like maybe like the surface pleasures of it were a bit less like immediate than some of the other episodes this season, than something like this, for example. But I don't know, this felt a little bit like something like Milagro to me, in the sense that I've always found that a difficult episode to get to grips with. And whenever I watch it, I'm unsure if I've like derived everything from it that there is to derive.
Yeah.
And yeah, but in many ways, this felt like old school X-Files to me in some respects. But I think what made it different was the reflection on aging that's present in the episode as expressed through the figures of, you know, the middle-aged now Mulder and Scully. And it starts with that, like the first crime scene. You know, where Mulder and Scully turn up and Mulder starts like messing around with the other agents, doesn't he?
Yeah, like your cool grandpa, basically. It's like it's like the, you know, your grandpa taking out like the fake blood pack or whatever to scare your friends when you come home from school. There's the bit where, you know, where the agents are like, oh, we've heard about you, you're spooky. And he's like, oh yeah, I bet they were staked through the heart with wood from the, you know, the three trees that were used in the crucifixion of Christ. And Mulder and Scully's like, you just did that to put them off, didn't you? And Mulder's like, kinda. There's a sense of like lovable kooky grandpa to Mulder now, which I think Duchovny's aged into remarkably well.
Yeah, I do too. And of course, Scully joins in a bit as well when she starts shouting about like gout and stuff. What this reminded me of was, I mean, if this is to be the last ever standalone episode, that stuff was kind of reminiscent of the way Mulder messes around with Tom Colton in Squeeze, I thought, right at the beginning of the series.
And there's even a nice bit of symmetry, I think, with like Mulder wearing glasses. When I think he actually did wear glasses at the very start when Scully met him, when she came down to the basement, I believe he may actually have been wearing glasses at that point as well, which gives you a weird sense of symmetry to the conversation as well. Like there is a lot of really nice stuff in here, particularly as regards to if this is the last standalone of the series. And I mean, you know, not to jump ahead, obviously, but the conversations in, say, the church and stuff like that, which feel very personal and very sort of lived in. Like, you're right when you say the episode deals a lot with aging, which I really, really like. But the season as a whole has dealt with aging really, really well. Like, one of the things I really like about the 11th season is, and, you know, I talked about it being a typical X-Files season, but you always have this through line of Mulder and Scully not being the same age they were and not pretending to be the same age they were when they did the original cases. So you have even, like, the bed scene in Plus One, for example. Like, you even have this sort of acknowledgement that they are older now than they were when they began. And, you know, maybe they're over the hill. And I think that plays into, obviously, the theme of this episode as well. You know, we'll probably talk about that when we get to talking about Barbara. But the episode is, like, Nothing Lasts Forever is the title. It's an episode that is about mortality and about reflecting and about age and about, like, the villains in the piece are trying to distort the aging process, which means, by default, your assumption is that the heroes are endorsing or at least accepting that age is something that happens. Like, Mulder has this really beautiful conversation with Scully in the church, not the final conversation, but where he says that, like, what are our lives but the consequences of all the decisions that we've made, which is, like, it's a very philosophical and existential approach to aging. It's not just that our bodies age, it's that our souls age as well, and that, like, it's not just that, like, gravity and biology and, like, cell death take their toll on our skin and give us wrinkles and stretch marks and all this sort of stuff. It's that, like, we are the sum of everything that we have done and experienced, and those experiences enrich us and make us deeper and sort of make us better people, but they also, they add mileage to us. And I think that there's something very true about that in this episode and in the season as a whole.
That's very true, but I think there's another aspect to it too in terms of their aging, which is that I think the revival comes along at a very interesting time, in that it comes at a time when Duchovny and Anderson can still portray Mulder and Scully as these characters with very sharp, like, physical instincts, you know. And I think that's expressed probably the most in the second episode of the season, this, in a way that might not have been so credible if the series had come back 5 or 10 years later.
Yeah.
But the imminence of aging adds a real pathos to it, like you say, in episodes like Plus One, that wouldn't have been present necessarily if the series had come back, like, 5 or 10 years earlier, you know. So I don't know, the series returned at a very interesting time for these two characters.
It did indeed, and I mean, you're right. We should probably remark, like, when we talk about the X-Files or the revival acknowledging aging, I wish that I will look anywhere near as good. Like, there's a wonderful moment where they visit Barbara, and Barbara, like, dares to offer Scully, played by Gillian Anderson, advice on skincare and aging. And you're like, are you in the same room as this woman who you are talking to? But I mean, even, like, Duchovny has aged remarkably well. And you're right when you say, you talk about, like, the physicality of stuff, like, for example, this. But I mean, even last season, where Mulder had the big fight with the stuntman in My Struggle 2, which seemed to exist primarily to show that A, you know, Carter could shoot an action sequence, and B, Duchovny, I know, sorry, never mind the chuckle, but that Duchovny could work with a stuntman and do, like, a convincing action scene on his own. Like, there is a sense that, yeah, these are two prime physical specimens. So when we talk about Mulder and Scully aging, they will probably age better than most of us, if we're being entirely honest.
I mean, let's talk a little bit about that conversation on the pew, I think it's going to go down as, where, you know, Scully talks a bit about her belief in God, you know, another reference to Charlie Scully, who's proportionately, he's got a lot of discussion time in this revival, hasn't he, compared to the series as a whole.
Stop making Charlie Scully happen.
And she talks about her mother as well, doesn't she? And like you say, that expression Mulder said, where he said something along the lines of, at the end of the day, we hope we made the right choices. And I don't know, the whole thing was just very nice and very delicate, I thought.
There is indeed. And I mean, there's even, like, the wonderful, you know, I talked about, like, the show being very loosely plotted in terms of ABC, but even thematically, like, the story of the sisters and, like, the, you know, the choices that they make and the consequences that we face at the end of them, which is played out in the episode subplot where, you know, the vigilante Buffy the Vampire Slayer character basically says, look, I accept the consequences of the actions that I've done, which you also, you know, which I've committed, which you also have Scully talking to Mulder, where she has that really touching bit where, you know, Mulder is like, well, look, if you'd turned tail and run from the basement, you never would have, like, lost your sister. You know, would have had a nice family. You would be Kirsch's boss. You know, you'd be married to a neurosurgeon, you would have a happy life. And Scully's basically like, well, I don't begrudge you that. And I don't, like, the choices that I made are the choices that they made. And they brought me here and they made me the person that I am today. And there's something very heartwarming and reassuring in that idea, in that sort of idea that these characters have endured so, so much. And like, one of the things I like about the X-Files, you know, one of the many, many things I like about the X-Files is the sense that as much as these characters have endured crazy things like alien abduction and, you know, pregnancies and, like, children that are not really their children and clones and all this sort of stuff, there's a real sense of, like, attrition and trauma to it. There's a sense that, like, living through these experiences has changed these characters over, you know, the 20-odd years that they've been together. And it just, it works really well. And there's a sense of that, all that weight in the conversation that Mulder and Scully have. I also, to be entirely honest, love the cheeky subversion of that story about Charlie Scully, where you get a sense that it's going to be this very earnest, and I prayed for Charlie to get better, and God made him better, and that's why I believe. And instead you have this wonderful cheeky, well, actually, I got a bit sick about praying for him for, you know, a couple of days. And I was like, actually, I want a puppy. And I got a puppy. And so, you know, Scully's like, that's why I believe. And you're like, that's probably not why she believes. But it's a very nice, playful way of sort of like teasing some of the show's profundity or, you know, sort of like heavy handedness at times. And I think it works very, very well.
Yeah, it made me wonder if we'd ever seen the Scully family dog in any of those flashbacks we've had in the past.
You mean like Charlie?
Indeed, yeah. Just a very quick word on like the investigative beats here, because you already mentioned at the outset that the episode takes some huge leaps forward. The one thing I did like about it is like the moment where Mulder sees like the missing spikes on the church railing, you know, and there's also a line about my gut doesn't need glasses. So, you know, even if aging is coming, you know, Mulder's intuition is undimmed, which I do like.
I do. And there's a real sense of it's good that the characters, like, it's good that the supporting police characters weren't a major part of the story, because if they were, it could easily have turned into the old, you know, the sort of like the Michael Caine or Morgan Freeman movie, where the old characters show the young kids how to do what they're doing. But there is something very satisfying in seeing that Mulder still has it, basically, and still understands it, and still, you know, that Mulder and Scully just sort of roll with it. Like, one of the things that I really liked about Plus One was, like, Mulder saying it's time to get back to our bread and butter. And it's almost like that never really changed. It's like, you know, they can slip right in, even after everything they've been through, and even with the show acknowledging that they are different now than they were, you know, when the show ended. They can still sort of step back in, they can still do what they've always done just as well, which is kind of comforting in a way.
Yeah, it really is, yeah. And let's drill into that final scene a bit, because it's so fascinating, and there's so much going on, and it's quite a lengthy scene, isn't it? Because it must have lasted 4 or 5 minutes, I think.
Yeah, the episode seems to wrap up, and then you get a 5-minute chunk of Mulder and Scully having a conversation in a church.
And there were some like really choice lines in there, I thought, and I mean, I probably missed a few, but Scully says one early on about accepting your place in the numbing embrace of the status quo, and I just thought it was a nice little bit of writing. And Mulder talks, doesn't he, about speaking to God through Scully. And I really liked the, like, to and fro of their exchanges, I do have to say. But yeah, when it gets into the stuff like you said about, Scully says, doesn't she, about I gave up on protecting our son, I gave up on us living together. Yeah. And then when Mulder comes back with his references to what if you'd got out of the basement, Melissa would be alive, Scully would be Kirsch's boss. I don't know, I think season 11 is engaged with the history of the series in a very fascinating and intelligent way, personally.
Well, one of the things I really like about that is that conversation is that it leaves, and this is something the show has always done really well, and I know that it frustrates shippers a great deal, so I apologize for the fact that I like it as much as I do. But one of the things I've always admired about The X-Files is that it allows Mulder and Scully a sense of privacy. Like, there's a sense, like, for example, in that conversation, that wonderful conversation, where Mulder's like, well, we've been together for so long, and Scully's like, are we together? And there's a sense that even the characters don't know the sort of status of their relationship, which is something that I really liked. And I know that a lot of people would like to, you know Mulder and Scully are together, or to know that they're in a relationship, or to know that they're engaged, or they're married, or they're divorced, or exactly what they are or where they are when they're at it. One of the things I've really liked about the show over its 20-odd year run is the fact that the show allows for a lot of ambiguity with regards to where Mulder and Scully are. Like, if you watch the show, you can form any number of opinions about when they started sleeping together, if they started sleeping together, did they sleep together before the 7th season when William was conceived, which it turns out maybe William wasn't conceived. Who knows? You know, but there's a sense that this captures, in some ways, one of the things that I really like about the Mulder-Scully relationship is that it captured a sense of, like, changing social dynamics in the 90s. It was a point at which people were, like, cohabiting for longer before they were getting married. They stopped marrying at all, where labels like, say, boyfriend and girlfriend became a lot looser and more casual, where sort of, like, the roles and expectations of a relationship were more ambiguous than they had been, like, in the decades leading up to it. I think The X-Files captures that very well. And I think one of the things that the show does is it allows this sort of space almost for the characters to exist and to, like, live and breathe in and of themselves. Like, the 8th season finale, which is one of my, you know, I really like the 8th season. I'm a big fan of the 8th season. One of the things I really admire about that is the closing shot of the episode, which seems to pull backwards away from Mulder and Scully and William, as if to say, these characters have, you know, been in the center of the show for 8 years. We're now going to leave them and give them their privacy. Mulder and Scully are going to go and they're going to do their thing, and they're going to have a life that exists beyond what we show on screen. And I really admired that at the time. Now, obviously, the ninth season completely threw a grenade under it. But even here, like, you have the bit where Scully, you know, Scully confesses what she's praying for to Mulder. And even the way that it's shot, with Scully leaning in and Gillian Anderson's hair getting in the way of, like, her lips for the opening part of her confession to Mulder, and, you know, then pulling back at the end and it remaining unspoken. Like, I mean, maybe this is, like, plot setup for the finale. Maybe this is something where Mulder will be like, I remember what you said to me at the church. But I also, part of me would be quite happy if it's never revealed what Scully said to Mulder in that moment, because it belongs just to the two of them, rather than belonging to me or to us or to the audience. And I know that's frustrating for people who are like, well, what is their relationship status? You know, what is the deal with Mulder and Scully? I like the idea that, like, these characters in this fictional world have a life of themselves, almost.
Yeah, I thought it was a lovely little, like, tableau. And the thing it called to mind to me immediately was the... Do you remember the moment at the end of the film, Lost in Translation, with Bill Murray and Scarlett Johansson?
Yes, yeah.
There's like a whispered moment there, which is kind of similarly ambiguous, I think, isn't it? And this one here seems to have engendered a bit of Twitter drama, I understand. People, I think the marketing had suggested there'd be a kiss and there wasn't. But I thought it was a beautiful little moment, honestly. And I think, depending on how My Struggle 4 turns out, you know, the end of Nothing Lasts Forever could make a nice little jumping off point for fans, couldn't it?
It could indeed. I mean, one of the things I've heard, and I don't know how true this is, so I'll defer to your judgment on this, Carl, is that the order was shuffled slightly in broadcasting and airing, right? So I believe Familiar was originally possibly going to go in this slot, was it?
That's right, yeah.
So I like the idea of both Familiar and this offering two different endings to the X-Files. Let's put aside My Struggle 4. My Struggle 4 is next week's problem. But the idea of, like, Familiar ending with, like, you know, Scully saying, you know, I want to get out of this town, and Mulder being like, no, you will never get out of this town. I think that's also a really nice ending to the X-Files as well, potentially, if it had aired in this slot. But I do like the idea of Mulder and Scully having a conversation in the church as a different alternative ending to the X-Files. I mean, Duchovny famously argued, I think, with, was it Postmodern Prometheus, that the X-Files, you know, could never end in theory. Like, they keep reviving it or keep coming back, or, you know, maybe they have a season finale and it wouldn't be satisfying or whatever. But, like, you have to pick a moment that is important to you as a viewer or as a participant and say, this is the ending of the X-Files for me. And for him, it was the ending of the Postmodern Prometheus, where Mulder and Scully dance in black and white. And that's, that would be a wonderful closing image for the X-Files in theory, but so would this. I really, really like the small-scale tenderness of Mulder and Scully having a moment together.
Yeah, I really did too. I thought it was beautiful. And anyway, we'll take that as our jumping-off point for today, Darren, I think. But as you know, there's got to be a morning after, hasn't there? So tomorrow, we're going to talk about the singing cult leader, Barbara Beaumont, and all about that aspect of the episode, I think. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that, Darren.
Perfect. I'll see you then.
Cool. And in the meantime, listeners, you can find us on Twitter at @X_cast or on Facebook at X-Files Basement, the X-Cast podcast fan group. But until tomorrow, trust no one.